welcome to On The Mic Podcast. This is your host, Tim Drake. On today's episode, I have the improv comedy and sketch group, the Katydids. I was joined by five of the six Katydids, Kate Friedman, Katie Clawton, Kate Lambert, Katie O'Brien, and Catherine Renee Thomas to talk about their new TV land show, Teachers. So Teachers started out as a web series that you can also see on teacherswebseries.com, and has blossomed into this new, absolutely hilarious comedy series. It's been compared to a mix of Bad Teacher and Broad City. I've had an opportunity to watch the pilot as well as a couple of the other episodes, and I can completely tell you guys, this show is absolutely hilarious. You are absolutely going to love it. So make sure you check that out. Right now you can watch the pilot episode of the show for free on Hulu, and I believe on iTunes. You can also get the season pass on iTunes. So it was so much fun talking with the Katydids. They have a big background in improv and sketch with Second City and I.O. out in Chicago. And I always love learning about everybody's stories and kind of how they came up in improv and sketch. And kind of finding out, you know, what made them gravitate towards that field of comedy. So it was a lot of fun kind of hearing their backstory, finding out how they got together and how they formed the Katydids. As well as, kind of writing the show, developing the show. And it was really cool learning also Allison Bree from Community and Mad Men is the executive producer on the show. And Ian Roberts and Jay Martell, formerly of Key and Peele, are the showrunners with them. And so it was a lot of fun finding out how those guys got involved with this. And just, you know, how the show has developed into what it is now from the web series that it started with. It was a lot of fun talking with them, like I said. And of course, all their names, you heard me say Katie, Katie, Catherine, and then Caitlin Barlow, who unfortunately didn't join us. But all of them, all their names are derived from Catherine. So really unique, you know, that they're able to kind of share that as well. And it was fun to kind of finding out how that's come about and some of the funny situations they've ended up in with that. I think you guys are absolutely going to love this episode and finding out about the Katydids if you have not already heard of them. Make sure you check out Teachers on TV Land starting January 13th, as well as on Hulu and iTunes. I promise you guys are going to love this show. Hope everybody is having a great 2016 so far. I mean, hell, we're only 6 days into it, but so far it has been amazing. So many great things are already coming together. It's been, you know, a great morning today over at Radio From Hell, starting to produce the Sundance show. So many great films coming through Sundance this year. I'm really excited to meet so many great different filmmakers and be able to see so many of the great films that are coming through. One particular that I'm really excited for is Swiss Army Man with Daniel Radcliffe and Paul Dano, two of my favorite actors. And I'm really excited to see this film. I just heard Daniel Radcliffe talking about this a few weeks back on another podcast, and really intrigued me because I know they workshopped the film at the Sundance Labs. It's kind of a development process for writers and directors, so I think it's great that, you know, that film is now debuting at Sundance, and I'm really excited to see that film. And also Yoga Hosers, Kevin Smith's new film, Johnny Depp, as well as both Johnny Depp and Kevin Smith's daughters star in the movie. So I'm really excited to see those two particular. I know there's going to be so many others that come up. So I've just been going through all of the Sundance slates, talking with all the publicists. It's going to be an amazing time. If you're in Park City or you're coming out to Park City for the festival, you know, hit me up. I look forward to, you know, talking with all sorts of new people. It's one of my favorite times of year out here. And then, of course, we always jump right back to LA after that. We always record a bunch of episodes during Oscar season. Of course, Jimmy Martin's going to be coming back on the show as we make our Oscar picks. Next week, the Oscar announcements are January 14th at 5:30 Pacific time. And of course, we will be streaming that live on onthemicpodcast.com, so you can watch the nominations as they come in. I'm really excited about it. I always have a lot of fun, you know, being part of the Oscar press list and finding all these great things out. So stay tuned for all of that. Thank you guys so much for the support. Stay tuned as well. I just found out a piece I wrote with Second City is going to be up on the Second City website coming up in another few weeks here. So yeah, I'll make sure to stay posted on that. If you're not following me already on Twitter at Tim Drake or at On The Mic Podcast, make sure you do so, and you'll be able to see the piece I wrote that's going to be going up on the Second City website. So yeah, thank you guys so much for all the support. I really hope you guys enjoy this episode with the Katydids. Again, it was so much fun talking with them and getting to know them a little bit more. And make sure you guys go watch Teachers. Again, absolutely hilarious show. It's definitely one of my new favorites, and I know it'll be one of your favorites as well. So I hope you guys enjoy this episode with the Katydids.
Hi, Tim.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good. How are you?
I am doing well. I'm so thrilled to have you guys on the show today.
Thanks for having us. We're excited.
Absolutely. I actually just finished watching the second episode. I saw the pilot episode, and then I just watched the one where the superintendent comes, and both of these episodes have just had me dying. So I've absolutely loved what you guys have done so far.
Thank you.
So now, before we kind of jump into talking about the show, I'm really intrigued in your guys' background through improv and everything. I only started into doing improv and things like that only about a year and a half ago, and so I always kind of love seeing when people are coming from Second City and I.O. Tell me a little bit about how you guys kind of got started into improv and everything.
Sure. So this is Katie Thomas. So we were all improvising in Chicago, and we were all kind of coming out in the training programs at Second City and I.O. around the same time. So we were coming improvising, and then Caitlin Barlow had this thought. She realized that she knew a lot of funny women named Kate, and there are variations of it in Tavern. And so she reached out to some of us. There was a show that I know that was called Radical Concept, and we'd bring a crazy idea for an improv show, and we submitted and got turned down, but decided we'd do a show anyway. And the first show, half of us hadn't even met each other, and we just got on stage and did a show, and it was fun. And so eventually started doing more shows and realizing that we had great chemistry. And that was almost 7 years ago when we did our first show. So we performed for a long time in Chicago for, 5 years or something.
So you guys definitely have a fantastic chemistry together watching the show and, you know, seeing a few of the clips that I've been able to find online. Now was improv something all of you had already kind of wanted to do, or how did that even kind of come about of getting into improv?
Well, I think it's probably different for all of us. I actually moved to Chicago summer before eighth grade, and the first show my parents ever took me to was the Second City main stage, and I just thought it was incredible. Although at the time, I never thought it was something that I would do. And then I wound up majoring in theater in college and coming home after college, after I graduated. And after 2 years in the city, I was like, you know, I think I'm going to give improv a go because I think it might be a good fit for me. And I took improv for actors at Second City, and I just fell in love with it. And I think it makes a really good use out of a lot of our strengths. And it's just something that we just really love.
So now how did I.O. eventually come into play, where you started at Second City, and then I saw that I.O. kind of worked its way in for all of you as well?
Yeah, we all performed on teams at I.O. individually, and I.O. was kind of the place that gave us our first run. So I.O. was the place that, you know, kind of we found our home at, and we run there on and off, I think, for 2 to 3 years. So I.O. has been very supportive of us, and it's also kind of where all of us met, because we were all individually on teams there.
So I've been really intrigued with I.O. I'm actually doing my first little bit of stuff with I.O. this summer when I'm going down to Los Angeles for the big LA improv festival that they do there. Because I'm just about done with Second City's writing program, and so I'm really looking forward to see kind of what I.O. brings into the mix now with all of that.
Cool. Yeah, they're all very different. All the different improv theaters have a different kind of focus or spin on things. So it's kind of cool to take classes in different places, because you get all kinds of different kind of improv tools and writing tools also. Even taking improv classes are tools also.
So now, when you guys started performing, did you immediately have the name the Katie Dids?
No, actually, I don't think we did, right? Didn't we decide over email or something? So I think, we were throwing out names, and actually we have a friend, shout out to Sandy Tamimi in Chicago, Illinois. I think Sam Tamimi, correct me if I'm wrong, suggested the name. And he's a lovely guy, and we're like, that's fun. And it's got the word Katie in it. And that was kind of it.
So when you guys started performing under the name Katie Dids, how long did it take people to realize, you know, that it was kind of a play on the fact that all of your names are derived from Caitlin?
Well, I think it's people in the improv community, you know, it's not that big of a community, so they knew it. And we always start our shows saying, hi, I'm Katie, I'm Katie, I'm Kate, I'm Caitlin. Katie Dids. Anyone coming to our show immediately gets it. But I think since we've moved to Los Angeles, people don't necessarily know our names, and especially when we're going into meetings, you know, just know where the Katie is. And then it is usually, like, baffling that they're like, wait, your names are all Katie? And it's like, I know, it's weird. kind of awkward first meeting, or funny first meeting, depending on how they handle it. But yeah, so we started going by last name in the business sense, because like much like a sports team, because otherwise it's impossible to have a large discussion when we're all named pretty much the same thing.
I would love to be in the room when those network executives meet you for the first time and try to figure out if you're screwing with them or not.
Yeah, they often get the question, if are all your names really Katie? And we shuffle our feet and are flush a little bit. it really is.
So now, how long was it that you guys were performing improv before you guys decided to start the web show for teachers?
We started improvising together in, December 2008, January 2009. And we had been making videos for the web from our very first run at I.O., which was somewhere in 2010. We started making videos to promote our show. And our videos, our I.O. promotions started doing really well, and so we decided, why not make some more videos? And so we started making videos, and then sometime around, sometime in 2011, our friend, a casting director in Chicago, Matt Miller, came to us, and we'd gone to him for a project that didn't work out, and he came to us and said, hey, you know, like, would you guys want to collaborate on this web series together? So we started writing in 2012, so January of 2012. So we've been performing together for 3 years. Before we wrote the web series, but we'd already written and produced a bunch of other videos that had gone viral and did well. So we've already been kind of practicing our hand at web content.
Yeah, and I saw that, like, I mean, some of those viral videos have been on, you know, MTV, Comedy Central, Perez Hilton. I mean, they were all over the place, you know, prior to that. And, I mean, that's amazing. It's so hard to get one video viral, let alone, you know, an entire string of them and, you know, eventually going into a series. So it's amazing, you know, the work that you guys have put into this.
Thank you so much. Yeah, we worked really hard, and it was great to perform for so long to really find our voice. Before we started doing that stuff, we weren't just kind of going out there and putting up random stuff. I mean, performing on stage, improvising, we really, really understood each other and who was wrong at what, and who was the person who was going to put a good button on the scene, or who was weird, or who was straight again. And so, yeah, we really, really worked hard for a long time, and we've been together 7 years now, so we really know each other. And we even do the videos to begin with was because we were using it to promote our improv shows, but to also sort of give people an idea, like maybe if they didn't know us as performers, that they could get an idea for our sensibilities and our comedy through our videos, and then they would maybe want to come and see our shows. That's how we did it. And we also promoted those videos a lot. You know, like we found out, like we would do all these searches and find articles and sites that might be interested in this particular kind of video. We would send to them. We did press releases. So we really did try to get the videos out there. And I think from very early on, we treated this group as a business very, very, very early on. We decided, what is our brand? We had that discussion. What is our brand? What type of comedy do we want to put out there? And so we knew, we very early on started, like, crafting this voice that is, you know, feminine and dark, and but also a little sweet, that we knew was our voice that we would put out there. And then it would be easy to kind of make a marketing plan to promote that specific brand. So very early on, we treated this as a business, even when no one else treated us as a business. But even while we were making videos, you know, instead of Dolly, it would be like a friend tied to a skateboard, you know, using his iPhone or something, you know. You know, treated as professionally as we possibly could for the resources that we had available to us.
And I think that's something, too, that a lot of young entertainers almost kind of forget when they're trying to go down this path, is that they have to treat it like a business from day one. And I always love hearing, you know, the success stories of entertainers such as yourselves that took that approach. And, I mean, it shows, you know, how that hard work pays off when you treat it as the business it is. So many people forget that it's called show business and not just, you know, trying to put out a video every week for no real purpose.
Yeah, we wanted to put things out, you know, that we really thought represented our voice and represented our voice in the best possible way. But yeah, we had a logo designed for us. We got a website, and we really just tried to, yeah, basically treat it as a business as much as possible so that we could eventually have this be our business.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of people in the comedy community and probably in a lot of the art
that kind of have this mentality that if they're so good, they, you know, they don't want to, like, go to that business side or be kind of stupid, like, go to the man, if you will, you know, or, yeah. like, sell out. You know, and I think that, like, yeah, regret that to some degree, but there's so many talented people out there that it's going to be really hard to find you if you just assume someone's going to find you in a dark, you know, a dark black box theater somewhere in Chicago, and you're such a good improviser that Lorne Michaels is going to swoop in and get you. You know, it's like, that's a lovely dream, but you've got to be smart about it, and you've got to be really aggressive in whatever business place you possibly can. Also, I think it came from, loving doing this. I think we love doing this so much. We were scared to get cut. I mean, the video came because we wanted to promote our shows because we didn't want to get cut because we enjoyed doing it so much. You know, so it's like it was just the drive was coming from we want to continue this because it's so much fun and we love it. So it's like we're forced to make it a business because otherwise, you know, one day we just would have been cut.
Yeah, and when you're doing that, plus when you're working with your friends, it doesn't even feel like you're doing work. You're just doing something that you love, and eventually it starts paying the bills, and that's when it's almost kind of shocking when that finally happens.
Yeah, actually, I don't know if she's on this call, but Caitlin Barlow moved out here in the summer of 2014 when we were back. She's a pilot, and her parents, her dad. Or the show got picked up. I think it was even on the show got picked up, and her dad asked her, "Are you going to get paid for this?" She was an EP on, a writer on, you know, creator of, was starring in, and her dad was so used to us not getting paid for this. He was like, "Are you getting paid for this?" But sometimes I personally have to remind myself that, like, this is a real job. This is for free.
So now, when you guys finally did meet with Matt Miller and he told you kind of about this idea that he had, how did everything kind of evolve that it was going to be, you know, teachers at this elementary school?
Well, we actually discussed that in the first meeting. We weren't sure. And I think we eventually landed on elementary school because we just thought it was such a special time for everyone. It's something that people so clearly remember and have such a great nostalgia for. And so, and also, I think it's funnier with the adult conversations that we have if the kids don't quite get it.
Yeah.
With kindergarten, you might pick up on it a little bit more, but with elementary school kids, it can just fly over their heads. Plus, the younger you are, the more honest you are. You learn to lie as you get older.
So I loved in the pilot when you have all the kids kind of going through and talking about, you know, what is bullying. And I was almost in tears laughing at the ant hair because never in a million years would I have thought of that. And then you cut to that little girl and it was absolutely brilliant. And to have the innocence of the kids, you know, saying, yeah, she has hair like my aunt, and oh, it's the only hairstyle that they knew how to do. I mean, that was so brilliant to use that innocence of the kids, not realizing, too, I mean, just how brilliant that joke really is.
Thank you. Well, thank you so much. That wig was priceless. Yeah, we really enjoyed it. Who described it as, like, what year, like, 2000 Kate Gosselin hair? Yeah. And our hairstyle pilot, she, Lucina, cut that wig, and we came in and saw it, and we were like, well, everything we hope didn't work. It's perfect. We all grew up in the Midwest. So in the Midwest, I don't know every mom I knew had a haircut. You know, it was just the typical, you know, middle-aged woman haircut. So it was just hilarious to us to see that on the trial. I assume I'll have that haircut in 20 years.
Well, one thing I absolutely love from just the get-go of the pilot is that it was really a very simple concept with such deep context, but such simple jokes that rarely, I mean, even when I'm watching, you know, some of the big shows out there, like the Big Bang Theory or something, rarely do I find myself laughing out loud incredibly hard. And that was something that from the very first couple lines that I found myself just bursting out laughing. And I think part of that is just the simplicity of their teachers in an elementary school, and you know, the kids are just so innocent that to have, like you said, you know, those adult conversations around them, it gives just the ultimate payoff with that.
Well, thank you. Yeah, no, I think we believe that, you know, keep it simple, and that's the cleanest comedy you can do. You know, a lot of times it's very easy to you want to do 10 things at once and make like 10 statements at once. But it just can very easily get chaotic and muddled. And it's just very simple to just kind of keep it with what you're one statement for one scene and what you're trying to do. What is the purpose of that scene and what is the purpose of this joke? You know, keep it very organized in a weird way is the best for comedy.
Yeah.
And I think also, I think part of what made the writing process slightly easier, I mean, it was definitely hard, I'm not saying it was easy, but we knew our characters so well going in. Because we wrote the pilot in the summer of 2014, we've been living with these characters for 2 years, and so having very specific points of view from these characters, you can even kind of tell from, hopefully you can tell from the first, you know, 10 minutes of the pilot, kind of which girl is which, and who is who, and, you know, so just that woman saying that statement, you kind of get, it's funny, because you're like, oh, I totally know that lady.
And I think you definitely can tell who each character is. And I think that's one of the hardest things when it comes to writing a pilot is, you know, whether it's a 20-minute, you know, sitcom or 45-minute, it's still, I mean, it's very hard sometimes to be able to show who each character is in that limited time. And that's where a lot of pilots that you see nowadays kind of fail. And that's where, I mean, I think you guys nailed it, is you really could see who every single character was, even from the first kind of faculty meeting there where the principal's telling him, oh, you've got to, you know, start this anti-bullying coalition. And, I mean, you can tell who everybody is in that instance. And that, it's one of the, I think, the hardest things you can do.
Well, thank you. That's so nice. I think it's because we, you know, we've been living with the characters. At this point, we've been living with the characters for 3 or 4 years.
Yeah.
You know, it started out with the web series that we just wanted to take maybe a part of ourselves and amplify it or magnify it and heighten it. And then, but once we moved on to the pilot, we realized that because we're transitioning from doing kind of one-joke sketches to telling a whole narrative with an arc and with character development, that we just had to really broaden and make more specific each of the characters. But by the time we actually got to writing the series, we had just been talking about these characters for like 2 years. So it really felt like anytime anyone would throw out a plot or an idea, we would all like unanimously say, this person should do it, because we know them at that point.
So that's totally Miss Watson, or that's totally Miss Dunnigan. We just knew.
Yeah, they all have very specific, you know, obviously characteristics, but also flaws. So it's perfect for any sort of comedy. You know exactly who is going to react the strongest in a certain situation.
So I think you guys played to that strong, too, with some of just the one-liners. I know I will never hear the phrase cat's pajamas the same ever again after watching the pilot.
None of us will.
So now, one thing with this, too, I mean, we've seen so many different workplace comedies from, you know, The Office, Parks and Rec, Outsourced. And I think this, too, you know, it kind of gave a fresh take on the workplace comedy. I mean, was that, even when you guys were developing the web series, was that something that you were trying to do? Was it, you know, kind of the goal to make it a workplace-type comedy, or it just kind of happened even as you were doing the web show?
Well, I think workplace comedies are interesting because you do get very close with the people you work with, but there's still a line that has to be drawn between professional and personal. And I think when that line gets blurred and people become very good friends, it's when it's interesting because people are always going through their own personal things, but when it's in a professional setting, sometimes you have to know when to cut it off, and sometimes for comedic sake, you have to know when to not cut it off. You know, work. And I think the fact that it was at an elementary school with children does have kind of a fresh new take on it, because it just adds another level of professionalism that you're expected to, you know, a level of morality, you're an authority figure for someone's child, so when you make a mistake, the stakes are so much higher.
So now, with having so many kids on set, have you guys found that difficult at all, you know, with filming the show, or has it been fairly easy having so many kids there?
We have really great kids on set. Our co-star guest, our kids were really, really great. Most of them had more credits than we have. Fine. Yeah. In fact, we filmed some behind the scenes, you know, bits where I think I worked with 3 different kids that had a lot of credits and had done a lot, had been in SAG since they were like 2. So we film like behind the scenes where I'm like asking them advice and they're like talking to their agents saying like, I don't have time for this, I'm working with an unknown. Because it was just fun to be aware of children, I'd be 7 or 8. They've been working, you know, for 5 years
camera. One of the girls was playing, one of our girls was unbelievable, is playing the young Dolly Parton in the new Dolly Parton movie.
So, oh, wow.
But the kids were, you know, you just had to keep them away from craft services. Like, that was big groups of kids when you had the big classroom scenes, was like, when they, you know, they'd run around and eat all the sugar and the soda and craft services and then come back and be totally off the wall crazy and then crash. We had some moments where kids were like, yeah, it was challenging. There was one scene, I just remember, that they had all just been given, I think there was maybe something special, a bunch of candy, and then we just had to get one shot, panning the room with the camera of them looking shocked, and it took us like an hour, because there was always one kid who was like bouncing in his chair or looking right at the camera, or smiling, or wanting to like ad-lib. All we had to get was one shot, but because they, I think we thought we were done with them, they just had us on the candy, and then it was like, no, one more shot.
Ever.
Yeah, you should do a drinking game with your friends where, like, you watch all the teacher series and you take a shot every time you see a child staring directly at someone. I think we got them all out, but they love to look right
at the camera. They love
to look right at the camera. Did they need one with the camera?
When you're training some of those young kids, and I know, as I've worked with actors and even adult actors, you yell striking to get the lights on. And even adult actors, I mean, they somehow all have to look right at the light. I can only imagine how that has to be even with kids there.
Okay. Yeah. I know.
So now, as the show got picked up, you have Allison Brie from, of course, Community and Mad Men that's executive producing. And then Jay Martell and Ian Roberts that, previously have worked on Key and Peele that are your showrunners. How did the three of them kind of get involved with the show?
We were so lucky to work with all three of them. We freaked out. Allison Brie, we have the same agent, WME, that connected us. They're actually, when we released the web series, WME approached us about wanting to sell it, and then offered to set us up with an executive producer. And our meeting with Allison could not have gone better. As soon as we walked in the room, like, we felt that she was like the seventh Katie did. just so wonderful and supportive. And she's been, so supportive of the series. And then once we sold it to TV Land, Ian and Jay came on board, and it was just like a dream come true to get to work with them. You know, I had watched Ian perform at ASCAD and at UCB, and we were all such huge fans of Ian Peele that it was such a great blessing to have them come on. And especially coming from an improv background, having Ian, that was definitely like an improv nerd. Biggest dream come true. We got to improvise with him a few weeks ago at a charity show, and it was like, we were all so happy. And it made the writer's room, easy and comfortable for us, because it allowed for improv in the writer's room, because Ian and Jay both, are comfortable with improv, so when we'd be talking about a theme, we just go ahead and start improvising it, and that's a lot more easier for us than to just talk about it.
So was it at all difficult kind of for the transition where they were coming from Key and Peele being such a heavily male-dominated show to coming to more of a female-driven kind of, feminist statue show?
Well, I don't want to quote Jay Martell, but he did say he only wants to work with women. But, they definitely commented after a few months in the writer's room, they were like, wow, this is really different.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was the six of us, Katie did, and then we had a female writer's assistant, Alyssa, who was lovely, shout out to Alyssa, and we had a wonderful story consultant, Jill Carverman, who's a dream come true. So, it was eight women and two men, and I'm not sure how often that happens in a writer's room in Hollywood, so they were like, this is so different, and then we all of us being friends before, and all of us being from the Midwest, this is a very different kind of environment. And the best part was that we got to teach them all kinds of crazy shit about women that they never... Ian says he's always Googling stuff.
Yeah.
Like, his search history is, like, all stuff that we've taught him. Sometimes we just put stuff in the script, not that we intend on keeping, just to make him Google it. So it's fun to watch him read stuff and go, what?
Yeah.
And we're actually teachers, and it was like, yeah, 100%. Yeah. We learned a lot, too.
How long did it take him to realize that you guys were just putting things in there just to mess with him?
I think we only did that once. We're like, well, we did
think it was going to say in, right? And then we were like, or what we used to do was we would guess if Ian was going to ask about this or not. Yeah. We're like, do we think Ian's going to have to Google this? And then we were like, we think so. And then we asked him, he's like, yes, I did have to Google that.
So now,
we thought we gave him an education on
Yeah. The real man, because he admitted he had to look it up.
Now, when they first told me about the show, they kind of gave me the comparison to a bad teacher meets Broad City, and I thought it was interesting that they brought up Broad City since Broad City also came from a web show. I mean, now that you guys are doing this full time, coming out at, from the web show to regular series. I mean, do you guys feel that might be kind of where TV's kind of going now in the forms of kind of giving a pitch to a network where now they're just kind of, they're scouring YouTube more or less to kind of find the next show?
Well, I think it's definitely, a way that it seems like it's continuing to go. And what I think is interesting about having something like a web series beforehand is that it's essentially a digital pitch. You know, you don't just have an hour in a room where you're trying to describe the show. You can actually show visually the world what it is like and to such a detailed extent that people can really get an idea for your comedy and also for the following that you can maybe already get online.
Yeah, I mean, it's in the metrics too. I mean, you can gather numbers on these things. So you can just say to them, look, like 10 million people watched my web video. Like, there's no guess that people are going to like it. You know that people are going to like
it. Yeah, you can show that there's an audience for it and that people do want to see something like this.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's cool to see. I mean, I don't know in general, but I know at least from the comedy world with Broad City and Workaholics. Workaholics
had they had Mail Order Comedy was their YouTube channel.
Gotcha. Yeah, but I mean, you're also seeing like people on SNL who are getting hired because they had a web presence and YouTube stars getting shows. And, so I think it's a really cool time. Kind of like Wild West, digital Wild West now. There's so many people creating so much stuff. I think it's really exciting, and there's so many more outlets to see it on now that I think this big change is that you just can access it in so many different ways. So there's so many more niches to be filled. There's so many more specific types of shows. I think like Transparent, I don't know that Transparent, like a broadcast network or a lot of networks would be like, yeah, let's go for it. And then Amazon did it. It turns out it's a weird niche, but, like, everyone loves it. So you can be on that niche. So I think there's just so many more possibilities now. It's easier to get yourself seen in a weird way.
I think it's interesting that you bring up Transparent because, I mean, with that, so many people when, Amazon started doing it and then Netflix, they started making just the streaming shows. So many people said that, wouldn't get the same recognition. And I love seeing, as the Emmys come around, and even as the Golden Globes were just recently announced, how, more and more those shows are kind of trickling into it. And when we had I had Dave Koechner on the show a few weeks back, and we were even talking about Beasts of No Nation, how that came out on Netflix, and, would that even, meet the Oscar qualifying, since you have to have, like, an L.A. or a New York screening. And he had mentioned that they managed to, as far as he knew, released it just so they would meet those qualifications. But still, I mean, that's going to be a show or a film that, is released by Netflix that very well could even get Oscar consideration. I mean, do you guys think that that's going to be kind of the way that we're going to see that part of it even go?
I mean, I personally, I hope so. I don't know if I can accurately say one way or the other, but I hope so, just for my own personal taste. I think that the stuff that is coming out on these digital platforms is so risky and so interesting, and I'm on the edge of my seat with the television that's being created now. I hope so, because it's a lot of those original content shows, and I'm, like, mainlining Jessica Jones right now, and, I don't know. I hope so. I think it gives voices to people who are able to create material without certain confines and restrictions that they might have under a different, like, network or studio or, what have you.
So I love that you mentioned, that they are a little bit more risky on not just, the shows that they're taking, but also the content. Because it's funny, as I bounce back and forth between Salt Lake City and Los Angeles, two night and day different type of cities. And I'll talk to people out here in Salt Lake where they'll bring up a Netflix show with me. And somebody just mentioned the other day, you know, I turned on Narcos and didn't know what to expect. And I was just like, you guys realize that, like, they don't have the FCC that they have to abide by. Like, yeah, you need to assume those are going to be riskier shows. And it's so funny how often I'll hear people in Salt Lake that don't realize that, yeah, most of those Netflix shows aren't going to be the most family-friendly centered show.
Well, we did get hit up by 1 million moms this week, so you know we've made it. And 1 million moms landing page. Talking about how we're corrupting everyone. So now we really know we've made it.
The thing I think is the funniest about that page, I was on a panel at Salt Lake Comic Con for the Muppets, and it was right as the new Muppet show was coming out, and the 1 million moms had attacked the Muppets over their content. And the funniest thing I thought when I had clicked on their page, at the time being, they didn't even have 500,000 followers on their page, so the 1 million moms wasn't even 500,000 moms. So I'd love to know how many...
No, that's just funny. 1 million moms is like 100,000 moms.
Yeah.
Get that. 10 moms on a
cul-de-sac
somewhere.
So I love that they've come after you guys for it. I think that definitely is a mark of, you know, you've made it to some degree more when you've got some of those extremist groups coming after. I just want Fox News to read one of my tweets one of these days and say that I'm a terrible person, and I will feel like I've made it at that point.
You guys are just sad about it. You can't get too upset about it. Not everyone's gonna like everything. So
yeah.
Any press is good press. We'll take it.
Yeah, I've started just showing my parents in any type of sketch or anything, and if they hate it, I know that it's worth doing. So that's usually the usually the best way to measure it for me.
Perfect.
So now as the show gets ready to release in January, January 13th is your guys' release date. How many episodes do you guys have for the first season?
We have 10 episodes. We shot them and edited, and they're all done. So we are just waiting for the world to see them. We're so excited.
So that's got to be the worst point of it at this part. It's just that waiting game and anticipating, knowing the product you have. That it's. I mean, less than a month now, but it's still just wanting everybody to get out there and see it.
Yeah, we're just so proud of it. But we're so excited to have everyone else be able to see it too. And everyone can see the pilot. You can download it for free on iTunes. Yeah, and on the TVLand website.
So having seen the pilot, I would suggest everybody do that because they'll become absolutely hooked. Absolutely hooked on the show after seeing it. So now before I let you guys go here, kind of touching back on the you know, early days of improv for you guys, where, you know, so many people are, I mean, Second City, Groundlings, UCB, all of them just continue to grow in their popularity and people wanting to learn and study improv. What advice would you have for those people that are just kind of starting to come up in the improv game?
I would say, without a doubt, create your own material, just find your comedic voice and invest in projects that you really care about and that you think, you know, express your voice in the best way possible. I think creating your own material and not waiting for somebody to give you an opportunity or a job is the best way to go. And now being able to put things online, you can share it without having, you know, a literal platform. You know, you don't have to have a stage. Like, basically, the internet is your stage, and you can put your stuff out there that way.
Yeah, I agree. The biggest thing for me is just don't let other people tell you what you can and can't do. Because there's a lot of people that take those classes at those theaters, if you're an improviser, you know, and the chances of you getting cast or being put on a team, sometimes they're low. And I feel like we've all seen people get really upset about it, or we've got upset about it ourselves, and we didn't let that stop us. So yeah, it just keep being true to what you love and what you think. Keep experimenting with it, you know. Keep trying it until it feels right.
Right, I 100% agree. I feel like it's get as much of an education as you can. Take classes wherever you can, because every institute is kind of different. But then, you know, take all of that education and make your own stuff, because you got to do you.
Excellent. Well, I know we've got the website that people can watch even some of the old web series on with teacherswebseries.com, and then of course the katiedids.com, where everybody can find you guys. As far as social media goes, if people want to follow both the show and all of you individually, where can they find you on social media?
Okay,
get your pens out. We Katie does have a Twitter account. It's at the Katie Did. And we also have a Facebook page, the Katie Did. We've got Instagram for teachers and Twitter for teachers, teacher series. Mm-hmm. And Facebook is teachers on TV Land. Mm-hmm. And then we all have individual accounts and these platforms. Which is just our name.
Well, excellent. So I'm so excited for you guys. I think the show is just going to be fantastic. Hopefully, you know, a lot of people, you know, are watching right away with the pilot and just stay hooked. And I know you can, like you mentioned, you can download the pilot now on iTunes and get the entire season pass on there so everybody can stay up to date. But best of luck to you guys. And really, I'm incredibly excited for this show. Absolutely, and hopefully we'll be able to connect with you guys out in LA one of these times.
Let us know your IO class shows.
Yeah, for sure. So, well, thank you guys very much, and yeah, best of luck on the series again.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You bet. Have a great day, guys.
Thank you. Take care.
We'll see.